This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Stories of New Americans on 101.9 News Talk STL. I've got a guest tonight from Germany, Dirk Voss. Mm-hmm. And Dirk Voss had a very exciting thing happen yesterday. What happened to you yesterday?
Well, I took the oath to the United States. I'm a citizen for the last 24 hours.
Congratulations. How do you feel now? Do you feel like an American or do you still feel German?
You know, I live in this country now for 30 years, so I don't see a big change. Okay. You know, I'm have accommodated a long time ago.
So. But was it an emotional experience when you actually
It was. It was. But I didn't cry, you know.
Okay.
It was like, I mean, it was a pragmatic decision after 30 years paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I would like to have the rights of a United States citizen if I pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I prepared for this. It took me 3 years to get it. And of course, I had to go through green cards before that for mm-hmm. 10, 20 years. And
mm-hmm.
But so it was a relief, I would say.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah.
You went yesterday or Friday, I guess, right?
Yesterday.
Was it at the courthouse downtown?
Yes, it was the courthouse.
Actually, I attended one on, I think it was Tuesday of this week, for somebody else that I knew.
Oh, and, really?
You know, I feel like I'm pretty blasé about this because I've been working in with immigrants and refugees, but I got choked up. It was an emotional thing just to see the way people react to, you know, it's emotional.
Yeah. I mean, all kinds of people react differently. I saw one person, he barely shook the hand of the judge and he ran out. He didn't want any pictures taken. He had no friends with him. Of course, I had a whole bunch of friends with me. You know, there were six of my friends who had time, who didn't have to work or took off, and they came and they were happy. But it's a very dignified atmosphere. I mean, nobody's cheering or something.
No. Okay. Well, you're from Germany. Germany is a beautiful country. I had a chance to visit there myself, as you know. And 84 million people is what I have read. Does that sound
correct? Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
After unification.
Yeah. Obviously, strong history, literature and music and philosophy. And I wanted to, you know, you're a history professor. We're going to talk about your career in a few minutes, but that I'm really glad to know that because I really like history and I like to know about history of the places of the people that we talk to on the show. So I'm going to
finally somebody likes history.
Yeah. Somebody, another nerd kidding. Like me, I find it interesting and a lot of people don't, but I really like to learn about the places of the people I talk to and where they're from.
Sure.
So we're going to kind of intersperse, I guess, history with your own personal story, but where in Germany were you born?
I was born in northern Germany, in a tiny little village, less than 1,000 people, south of Hanover.
Okay.
Super small. People have even problems to pronounce the name, Schaffoldendorf.
Oh, that's a long one.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. And what was your childhood like there? What year were you born?
1963.
Okay. So how was growing up in that little village,
you know,
in the 60s
as a kid,
70s.
Everything is wonderful.
Yeah,
you know, you don't realize the shortcomings, and in a small village, everybody knows everyone,
which can be good and can be bad.
Yeah, but as a kid, it's wonderful because I called everyone uncle and aunt, everyone in the village, and they knew me. They knew my mother. You know, I had a great time.
Mm.
My mom thinks to this day I had a horrible childhood because, you know, I grew up, I mean, without a father, I mean, single mom, and there was a stigma involved in the 60s with that. But in reality, you know, I had a great time. She worked night shift in an hospital, so she slept during the day. She feels to this day guilty. I had a blast in this village because everybody was looking out for me and the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on our own. You know, it was a little paradise.
Mm.
You know, we were in the creeks, you know, looking for frogs and fishes. I mean, it's like Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah, I was just
Sawyer.
Thinking.
I mean, exactly like that. So I had to visit Hannibal, Missouri.
Oh,
of course, okay.
Well, I'm sure you played soccer, football, as you called it, and other types of sports or activities were popular.
You know, we played the kids' games.
Yeah.
But when we moved to Southern Germany, when I was in the first grade, and so that was a big cultural shift because in Europe, people speak different, strong dialects, and I didn't understand them.
You really didn't understand them?
No. At the beginning, I thought, oh my God, I have no idea what they're saying.
Huh.
There was one woman asking me if she can make me some sandwiches. And this sounded, from the area I grew up in, like she wanted to make me some snails. And I thought, oh, and I was okay.
No, thanks.
And then she brought out ordinary sandwiches. And I thought, oh, okay, that's different. And I remember this word now.
Was this in Bavaria or?
It was in Swabia. It was southwest Germany.
Schwäbisch.
Yeah. And I had a real hard time. I mean, it took me months.
Yeah.
But then I learned and picked it up as a kid.
Well,
and
yeah.
I spoke it fluently.
Yeah.
And my mom, very often when I was with my friends, she said, what did you say? I didn't get your conversation at all because she's North German.
Yeah. What? I remember I went when I was in high school, I lived with a German family for a short time and attended school there, kind of on an exchange program. And I remember going to school 6 days a week. Was that your experience too?
Yeah, it's 5 days and
five and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Saturday was only a couple hours.
Was that required or was
it was the law.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I that's very typical. But Saturdays is really winding down everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday was, we had 3 or 4 hours of school. Short hours.
I also remember probably the school days, maybe I've got the details wrong on this, but I remember coming home every day for lunch and the parents would have 2 hour lunch break from their jobs. So people would go home in the German village I was in and have lunch together, which was the main meal of the day.
Absolutely.
And then dinner was just sort of little sandwiches. Is that the way it was for you?
School was over and we had a lunch and I went home with my mom.
That is so nice.
I mean, my dad, when she married later on, he was still at work, but all my friends, I don't know anyone, we had no school lunch.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, that is, you bring your own little lunch box.
Yeah.
For the break, but there is no lunch. You're not staying longer than 1 o'clock there.
Yeah. Wow. I really liked that system. I thought it was nice.
Well, it's a very family centered.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, how was World War II taught in your history textbooks in school or by your history teachers?
That's a very good question because the Second World War changed everything. You know, 1/3 of Eastern Germany was totally lost. The middle part became communist. And the Western part is where 16 million refugees from the Eastern Europe came. And I'm part of it. I mean, my parents on both sides have strong connections there. And my stepdad and my biological dad, they all are refugee kids.
From the East?
Yeah. What today is Poland and Russia. And so, of course, this is very intimate personal stories, of course. But in school, you know, what we learn is very abstract.
Mm.
I mean, we learned the rise of Hitler and the Nazis, but it was always something that happens in Berlin. We didn't learn anything about the local people. Of course, there were local Nazis everywhere who took over little villages, small towns. The town I grew up later on in South Germany had 60,000 people. We never mentioned any Nazis there. Only later on was there some research done by someone, and I was already in college, and he published it, and I was amazed. Many of his names were very familiar to me.
Very familiar. Really?
Yeah, they were. I mean, I was with their grandchildren in class, but we didn't learn any local Nazi history. It was all about the rise of the Nazis and concentration camps, the attack on Russia. The Holocaust was taught my class. Yeah, in my classes. But I asked my mom, and she said she learned nothing in the 50s. Nothing. Wow. Was totally taboo. And I said, why? And she said, well, because they were all involved in these things.
Yeah, I wondered about that. What was your family's experience during the war? If they were were they still living in the East at that time, or were they?
On my father's side, they had, of course, they were driven out in 1945.
Okay.
And my step-grandma was gang raped by Allied soldiers, which you never see in American movies.
Yeah.
And her son, my stepfather, had to watch it.
You know, I read a book recently. I didn't know this, but after the war, thousands of Germans committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that, in order to avoid things like that, because they were afraid of the Russians and Allied soldiers coming in and taking revenge. And
When I say Allied, I include the Russians.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Americans don't like to hear about, but it was Russian soldiers who raped her. But yeah, and my grandmother told me she saw young women committing suicide after being raped.
Yeah.
And because they couldn't, and also they had no food, they ran out of food for their children. So she describes the scene when she's crossing a bridge and young woman kisses all her children and then throws her into the icy water and then jumps off.
This is what I read, and that happened hundreds of times.
Many times.
I'd never heard that before.
Isn't that interesting?
Terrible.
But the other side is my western part of the family, on my mother's side. And they had a very different experience, because the village, it was a day before the Americans came, and it was because the Americans attacked. And our neighbor, knowing that the Americans will come, he was putting bed sheets as white flags out of the house, so the Americans knew there are no soldiers. And a group of SS saw that. They drove to the house. And they knocked at the door early morning. He opened the door, he thought it was the Americans. And when he saw the four SS men, he knew he's done. And his family, they would kill the whole family. So he begged them not to kill his children and his wife. And they didn't, but they shot his eyes out and dumped him a mile away.
Who was this now?
That was in northern Germany, in the village I grew up in, and it was on the western side. My grandmother told me the story. Mm. My mom was too young to remember that. She was 5 years old when that happened. They rescued the men. The Americans rescued.
Oh, he survived.
They drove out of the village, neglected their duty. I mean, they had to check to make sure that the other troops are safely have passage through the village.
Yeah.
And these four Americans drove out of the village, found our neighbor. He was still alive. They shot his eyes out, brought him back into the village, and then to our station for wounded soldiers, and he survived the war.
Unbelievable.
Blind, without a face.
Wow.
You can imagine.
Yeah. No, there are
many
so many
people in the village didn't vote for the Nazis anymore.
I know. After that. Well, let's take a short break. When we come back, I want to go back a little bit and talk about how and why the war actually started. Hmm. Maybe get some little bit of context to this, because, I think that would be an interesting insight into things that happened later. Okay, you're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9.
You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Okay, welcome back to Stories of New Americans. We're talking with Derek Voss, a very interesting story about his life in Germany. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the war, how World War II started. There was it was called the Weimar Republic, I think, between the wars.
Sure.
And kind of what was life like then that led to the rise of the Nazis and Hitler and the war? What?
Well, the Weimar Republic was a democracy, and women got the right to vote 2 years earlier than in America.
Oh.
And it was an incredible freedom for people that not everyone appreciated. Also, my grandparents were not Nazis. They resented the new republic because they had lost all their money during the inflation, which was the fault of the government, because they paid their workers when they were on strike under occupation salaries, and they printed money, which of course you cannot just do print money. And the cost, all their savings were gone. But, you know, they never voted for the Nazis because of that, but I bet some people did. But the Nazis really took off during the Great Depression, which happened 6 years later. And Hitler had a very simple program. He said, play down the Jews a little bit, the issue about racism, focus on one thing, and that's the economy. And his slogan was, give me 4 years, 4 years, and I will turn the economy around. And when he came to power, he did this. You know, I talked with many, many old people, and they said, we had jobs suddenly. It was amazing. And interstates were built. We had never seen interstates, Autobahn. And people were saving money to get VW cars, the car for the people. I mean, the economy turned around. And I think that is responsible why Hitler was not ousted from power. He really delivered.
Yeah,
the prosperity, of course, at the cost of democracy. Left-wing people ended up in new prisons called concentration camps, and they added to that the only minority the Germans had, the Jewish population, to this population of concentration inmates. And people, they looked the other way because they had a good life, and they did not want to rock the boat. I think you see that today in Putin's Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are very few people, very few brave people who challenge Putin and the elites in Russia right now. And I think it's very similar to what happened in the 30s in Nazi Germany.
And then the Holocaust kind of, I guess, gradually became more of a predominant theme.
Right. I mean, the discrimination set in from the beginning. You know, people were harassed in school. They were hazed in public to get them out. And half of all German Jews left.
Oh.
And however, when the war broke out, most Jewish people live in Eastern Europe. So that's when the plans were made by the German government to exterminate 6 million Jews, to get them all rid of the European population. And they were the first big attempt to really kill the people. But they're only the first step. Most Americans forget the Jews are the first step to ethnic cleansing in Europe. The Polish people would be the next, and the Russians. And the Germans killed 20 million Russians. They were not all of them killed in battle.
They also killed gypsies or Roma people.
Of course, homosexuals, Roma.
Priests.
Gypsy. Priests, if they resisted. I mean, any kind of resistance. I mean, Protestant preachers like Karl Bonhoeffer was killed in a concentration camp. Catholic priest, Alfred Delp, was killed.
And then when do you think people, the common people, finally became aware of this? A lot of people say, a lot of Germans say, we never knew, but do you think most people did know, but just, as you say, look the other way? I'm talking about like concentration camps and the Holocaust.
Yeah. That was a question I had for older people all the time. And they insisted we did not know about the Holocaust.
Okay.
On the mass killings of the Jews. And I talked with my mom. Of course, my mom was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do you believe this? And she said, absolutely not.
No.
She said, no, I don't believe that. But I said, what did you know? I said, I knew nothing. I was 5 years old, of course.
Was there a lot of anti-Semitism in Germany before
the Nazis?
Yeah.
I think anti-Semitism really started out in a big way after the First World War.
Okay.
Because, you know, before that, before the First World War, Germany was a kind of magnet for Eastern European Jews because Russian Jews, they had pogroms, that means killings, mass killings of Jews. And look at the Albert Einstein family. They're originally from Eastern Europe, and they found a new home in Germany. And look at Albert Einstein's career. It's amazing. He became a professor, and there was a building already during his lifetime while he's working in Berlin named after him. I mean, so it was opportunity for many Jews in Germany before. I'm not saying there was no anti-Semitism, but it really came out in the 1920s and in the 1930s, of course. It becomes increasingly like a murderous attempt.
Were they kind of being scapegoated for a lot of the...
Yeah, the lost war, economic problems. I mean, it was this huge conspiracy theory mm-hmm. that the Jews are behind everything.
Yeah.
And they are responsible, and they somehow pull the wires, and they are responsible for the communism in the Soviet Union, for the Great Depression. And yeah. It makes no sense. But here's the really scary part. I noticed these ideas are crawling back in Germany. Slowly but surely, I met now at least two people, adults, born after the Second World War, who said, well, the Jews are behind that. And that, I couldn't believe. My chin dropped. I thought, no way. After this experience, this anti-Semitism is coming back.
Mm-hmm. How many Jewish people live in Germany these days?
You know, I have to...
Couldn't be very many.
I don't know.
Okay.
The German government has a special program. If you can prove Jewish ancestry, and especially if you're German ancestors Jews in Germany, you get automatically the German citizenship. I met one of my students. He had a German passport
mm-hmm.
because his ancestors fled Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. I cannot give you the exact numbers. Okay. It's not as big as it was before.
Yeah, I'm sure. We could talk about this all day, but we don't have all day, unfortunately. So let's talk about your teenage years, because you lived in a very interesting time after World War II and mm-hmm. before German reunification. Yeah. And you were there, I guess you were there when the Berlin Wall fell mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So what were your teenage years like in the 70s and 80s? Mm-hmm. Was the fact that Germany was divided in people's minds mm-hmm. or was it not? Make sense?
Yeah, I think I know what you're alluding to. For me, East Germany was it was like a prison camp. You cannot visit it.
Did you ever visit it during those times?
I did late when I was in college, but you need an invitation to do that. But it was really outside our experience. And we never could go there. And it was like a weird place. But when I finally went there, you know, and I had already visited the United States. I had visited Morocco, most Western Europe. I thought I'm in the most exotic, bizarre country I have ever visited. And these were people who spoke the same language I do. And sometimes they didn't even realize that I'm from West Germany. And they treated me like an East German. And I got an education unbelievable.
What were some things that you noticed? What were some of the things that...
For example, of course, I'm naive and curious. So I walk into a grocery store to check out what they have in the shelves. Immediately, the employees come after me and they yell at me. angry yelling. They said, "Where's your basket?" I look at them. I don't have a basket. I just wanted to look around. "Get your basket immediately." So when they showed me at the entrance, I mean, they thought I'm a total jerk. And I thought, why do they yell at me? So I saw this stack of baskets in the beginning. Uh-huh. So I stroll around and they glared at me, mad as hell. And I thought, I felt really uncomfortable.
Mm.
And I went outside, put down the basket and left. And I told my East German friends what happened. And they were laughing their heads off. I had committed the biggest no-no. You must have a basket in your hand when you enter an East German grocery. Why? I said. Because they need to control the number of people in a grocery store.
Oh.
Because, you know, if certain times things are, you know, you don't have everyday bananas. If there's bananas, people will attack the store almost in by the thousands. So you have to control this by handing out. You only get in when you have a basket. And when you get out, you give it to the next person. I didn't.
And
that's not capitalism.
Did you stay in that store long enough to notice whether the shelves were full or empty? Or
they
what?
They decorated them as if they're not empty. But when I look at the goods, it was, you know, red flags, you know, I'd put there. And I thought, who's buying
what
that?
What year was this?
That was in 1987, 88. Shortly before.
Yeah, that things were starting to open up by then, I guess, or not?
No, okay. Not yet.
Was that still Honecker?
Yeah, it was still communist. And they had a tight grip on power. But I tell you, these stores, you know, I was looking for toothpaste. Every product was wrapped in gray paper. Everything looked carton. Everything looked not very appetizing. And the toothpaste was also gray when you squeezed it.
Gray toothpaste.
Oh. Yeah, everything looked shades of gray. And I thought, oh my God, this looks awful. So when we went to East Germany, we brought to our friends Western toothpaste.
Oh.
Because they loved it.
Oh, not blue jeans, but toothpaste.
Toothpaste, and of course, and then oranges and bananas and things like that, you know, because they couldn't buy that.
Wow. Did people feel hesitant to speak to you because you were a foreigner? Quote-unquote foreigner, or did people seem nervous in the streets? Or?
In general, in East Germany, people don't talk to each other.
Okay.
And they don't make jokes.
Oh.
When we as a group, with a few friends from the West and same age group, Eastern Germans, were in a bus or a streetcar, you know, we were laughing and our friends were silent. You don't want to raise any attention. You don't want to stick out. Keep your head down, be calm. You don't talk to strangers. You don't create a ruckus. You don't laugh loud.
And the atmosphere on the streets was just...
depressing.
Depressing.
It was depressing. It was horrible.
Did the people dress differently from in the West?
Shades of gray.
Shades of gray again.
Really? I mean, that appeared to me. They had some colors, but it was... everything was cheap.
Wow.
You know, these cheap jackets. I mean, everything. It was not real leather jackets. They had these pleather jackets on. And that was even special to them. And we were like, whoa.
Mm.
Yeah, it was. But some people had friends in the West and they got jeans then.
Yeah.
Or sneakers. But then you stick out.
So East Germany was one of the so-called satellite states that was, I think, one of the most oppressive, right? Compared to Hungary or the Czechoslovakia?
I have to admit, I never went to Poland under communism. When I was there, it had already broken down more or less.
Mm.
So I heard that, and I think it's true, but I cannot confirm it. I think Romania was
Romania,
much worse.
Right. But compared to Poland and Hungary and Czechoslovakia, I feel like East Germany.
You know, what impressed me was the standard of living in East Germany was actually pretty good.
Mm.
I mean, our friends had cars.
Did they?
And they had color TV, nice modern apartment. And the toothpaste, as gray as it was, it worked. You know, it was as good as the Western one. And I thought,
it just didn't look very appetizing.
It didn't look very good, right. But it worked.
Okay. Let's take another short break here, and then we'll talk more. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9 FM.
This is Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Okay, welcome back to Stories of New Americans. We're talking with Derek Voss, a very interesting story about his life in Germany. And what was the atmosphere in your community like that? It must have been unbelievable.
It was unbelievable because by coincidence, I traveled on this day, had a visa to East Germany. So when everything broke down, I was traveling the other way. We saw 30-mile traffic jams at the border. 50 miles later on, people wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And it was a coincidence of history that on this day, we're traveling into East Germany. And people at the border, they yelled at us, "You're going the wrong direction."
Did you know what was going on when you were traveling there?
I mean, because the night before, we woke up the next morning and we saw all these East German cars in our college town, which was close to the border, and people were sleeping inside there. And I thought something happened. So we turned on radio, of course, not TV.
No cell phones.
And there it was. They opened up the border overnight. And it was unbelievable. And hundreds of thousands, whole families crossed the border into West Germany.
Did you go to Berlin then?
We were in other cities.
Okay.
We were in Leipzig and Dresden.
But I remember that here, but I can't imagine how joyful in Germany that must have been. People were dancing in the streets.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, the joy was in the West. When they crossed over, people gave them coffee, fruits, you know, welcomed them.
Toothpaste.
Colorful toothpaste, something like that. But, you know, it was still tense on the other side because the border guards were there, and these are real combat troops guarding there, and they looked at us with stony faces. Their world was collapsing, and it didn't look good. And we were at a demonstration in Dresden, and I didn't feel comfortable, as if this could really, really turn ugly. You know, so there was some uneasiness about the whole thing.
How long did it take for their world to eventually collapse?
It took 2 years.
I mean,
they tried to continue as a democratic socialist country, and it didn't work out because the people wanted to leave.
Were all those guards there still looking tough in those 2 years, or did they kind of eventually?
They eased up, you know, of course. But they still had the tone and the looks. And the border guards, I tell you, that's an experience I wish everyone in the world can experience.
Wow.
To visit a tough communist country, you feel very small in front of these people.
Gosh.
I mean, they look at us, "Papers, please." And they look in my eyes, and you don't make any jokes in this moment.
All business.
And they are strict.
Well, it's been over 30 years since reunification, is Germany finally kind of stabilized and one entity, or are there still differences between East and West?
Huge differences. Of course, I missed much of the development, but I visit Germany twice a year.
Okay.
And sometimes I go to East Germany. I spent 7 years ago a sabbatical year in Berlin at the former elite university, Humboldt University in East Berlin. And I tell you, there's still a difference, a huge difference in mentality, in the way people interact, in expectations, and there's a very different, and you see that in politics too.
Well, for one thing, under communism, I suppose they had their basic needs met. They might not have lived in luxury, but they had, free healthcare and school, and probably Sozialhilfe. They got a lot of assistance from the government as needed, but then that may have changed, and the work ethic probably was different, and that took some adjustment.
Yes, much more demanding.
Yeah.
For example, friends told me if there is a certain good in the grocery store, they will tell their boss, I'm going shopping. And that means standing in line for hours.
Yeah.
And everybody does that. In the West, you cannot take off, go shopping during work time.
Economically, though, is it sort of more balanced now?
No.
It's still not?
No, because what happened is, and that's really a tragedy, all these state-owned, government-owned companies collapsed. Totally collapsed. These people became unemployed. And, of course, West German companies moved in.
Yeah, and they had to basically financially support this whole
unemployment
country.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but it, you know, it's devastating. You work hard, you want to succeed, but the company is closed down by a West German owner because they can produce in West Germany much cheaper.
Yeah.
Of course you're angry at the West Germans. And I felt this anger when I visited.
Well, looking back now, in hindsight, do you think reunification was a good thing? Or do you think were there more disadvantages to it than advantages?
I think you could not avoid unification because the people wanted that, especially in the East.
The West did too?
Most of the West, not all Westerners. Like my stepdad, he said, okay, who's paying for all this?
Yeah.
And he was very skeptical about this. But, you know, the people would have left. The whole country would be emptied out.
I guess it was inevitable.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, we could talk about this all day, but I want to talk about your story too, because you know, you said you came here about 30 years ago.
Yeah. And
did you come as a student, or how did you?
Yeah,
that
I came
happen?
Here as a student. I only had a bicycle, and
Only have a bicycle. You rode your bicycle here.
How ironic! Nothing had changed in my life, or so it seems. And I went to graduate school. I had a very good American professor in Germany, and so I decided to get a PhD. In American history.
How about that?
And I got accepted at the University of Oklahoma. I landed in St. Louis because my cousin was at WashU, and he married in the summer I arrived. So I was here for a wedding, and then I took my bicycle and cycled to Norman, Oklahoma from St. Louis.
You rode your bicycle to Oklahoma from the...
Yeah, I kept a diary about this. It was a great experience.
I was impressed. You riding your bike from Soulard to Merrimack, but this is ridiculous. How many days did that take?
Oh, it took me weeks and weeks. I mean, you know, I was 6 weeks on the bicycle, took my time. And,
okay.
And got a PhD.
Then you've been teaching American history. You teach only American history in here?
No, I teach European history because I have an MA in European history from Germany. I studied there already.
I think you have taught in other countries too?
I taught in other countries. Vietnam. In 2009, I was in Vietnam, and I taught in Canterbury, England. We have a partner exchange program. And I was teaching summer school twice in China.
And you're teaching now in, can I say, St. Louis Community College?
Yeah.
And you've been there for a number of years.
Oh, yeah, 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what differences you see, number one, between 20 years ago and now with American students, but then also comparing American students to German, British, Vietnamese, and Chinese.
You know, young people will be always young people. You know, certain things don't change. All young people are somehow the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they perform differently because of their cultures.
Yeah.
And I taught in Texas too, and I tell you, these students always said, yes, sir, no, sir. That doesn't mean that they respected me more than the Missouri students. You know, it just seems like that. In Vietnam, the same thing. You know, they were very polite, but, you know, they're still young people. So I don't think there's a big difference between, really. I mean, young people will be young people, and that's a good thing. You know, they have certain flaws, and hopefully they can overcome this and become more mature.
What was it like for you when you first arrived here? Were there some cultural challenges that you faced?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can you think of some?
Oh, yeah. I can tell you a story right away. I was on a visit in Philadelphia. I visited my American professor who taught me American history for the first time in Germany. And I went to a grocery store. Total difference to East Germany. This woman, young woman, she was the cashier. She, no German would do that. She looked me right in my eyes. And then she smiled at me. And she said, "Hello, how are you? It's pretty hot today." I blushed red because I thought she's hitting on me. I mean, it's a cultural misunderstanding. Uh-huh. Of course she didn't.
So in West Germany, shopkeepers would not interact like that?
No way. You don't smile at strangers.
Even in the West.
Unless you really like them.
Yeah.
You know. And I was, I blushed red. I didn't know what to say.
Oh.
That is a cultural misunderstanding.
Interesting.
Most Europeans think that Americans are very, very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, they're polite.
Hmm.
Interesting. They're really polite. It's a different kind of politeness.
Yeah.
In Germany, you can say, "That will cost you $2.50.
Yeah.
And you don't have to smile.
Yeah.
Nothing. But, and it's totally fine to do that.
Uh-huh.
And that's why American students in Germany really feel, oh, these people are mad. Or they don't like me. That's a misunderstanding.
Interesting. Did you ever experience any discrimination here?
Against Germans? No. Quite the opposite. And I felt uncomfortable by this. For example, when I or attended the first orientation phase at the University of Oklahoma, there was an older gentleman, and he welcomed every student personally. And when it was my turn, he said, "Oh, you're from Germany. We need people like you here." Behind me was a student from Korea, and he asked, "Well, where are you from?" "Korea." "Welcome."
Oh, really?
And I thought that was rude.
Yeah.
And
saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah. I was welcome because I'm German. I mean, I think that was the wrong message.
Yeah. You know?
So, no, I didn't experience this kind of discrimination. But, you know, sometimes people have a good image of Germans, which is not necessarily justified. And they give me sometimes credit. They think I'm highly educated because I'm German. No.
Well, I think most Americans think of Europeans as sort of more sophisticated than we are and more, I guess, educated or more worldly. They're not?
They're not, no. And I tell you, my family in this little village, they are what Americans would call hillbillies.
Really?
None of them ever studied, you know. I mean, they're good people, but they're not educated, not sophisticated. They never visited another country.
Yeah. Well, you're educated. You're sophisticated. So you're...
Yeah, thanks to education, yeah.
Yeah, thanks to education. You know, St. Louis used to be a really German city. Mm-hmm. We had German restaurants everywhere up until, I don't know, I guess the 60s maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We even had Turnvereins here. And I don't think they're in use anymore. These are like basically gymnasiums, right? Sports centers.
Yeah. Sports clubs. Yeah.
Sports clubs. We've got the buildings. If you look around St. Louis, you'll see buildings with Turnverein on the front, but obviously they're not used anymore. And, you know, Anheuser-Busch, and we have a really proud German heritage with a lot of German immigrants. I'm part German. I think a lot of people in St. Louis are part German. Interestingly, though, now Germany is becoming a country of immigration, a refuge for people from other countries. And so I remember, I think Chancellor Merkel took 1 million, mostly Syrians and Afghanis, in 1 year. Do you have a sense of what's going on, how that is being perceived? On the ground, are German citizens okay with that? Is it causing backlash? Is it causing problems?
Well, the first welcome of the 1 million was really nice. It was like when the East Germans came over the border when the wall collapsed. But there was a backlash against that, and you see what you see in most Western countries. There's now a strong anti-immigration movement. Crime is blamed on foreigners, you know, and they are they cannot be integrated. All these arguments, you see the same anti-immigration movements exploding all over the West, including in Germany.
And Germany is the country that I have some Bosnian friends here who say that there are a group of, I don't know where they're from, I guess Syria, mm-hmm. Afghanistan, they're making their way through Europe, mm-hmm. hoping to get to Germany, and they're stuck at the border of Bosnia and Croatia. Croatia won't let them through, yeah. and they're just sort of being held in Bosnia, but the goal is to get to Germany. Mm-hmm. Why is it that people want to go to Germany? Is it because of the Sozialhilfe assistance they get, or are there opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the Germans have a refugee program. They pay a lot, but you cannot work.
You cannot.
You're not allowed to work. You have to live on these subsidies.
You're talking about people who come as refugees?
Yeah.
And then how long does that go on? Do they eventually get a chance to become a citizen or something?
In a few cases, yes. But in many cases, they're sent back. Oh. That's why I find so many Bosnians
yeah.
who speak perfect German because they grew up in Germany. They're yeah. now living in St. Louis. Right. And they're now my students.
Really?
Because Germany is very tolerant to let them in, but not open-minded.
Well, the Bosnians that went to Germany, as I understand it, they were given refugee status until the war in Bosnia ended. And
That's
then
right.
when the war ended, they got Bosnian, mm-hmm. yeah, they were forced to leave. And so many of them had no place to go in Bosnia. So right. some of them came to St. Louis. Yeah.
Germany has no official immigration policy.
Wow.
You're still a refugee,
yeah.
but you want to immigrate to Germany? The Germans have really problems to wrap their mind around this concept.
Mm-hmm.
We went to other countries,
yeah.
but others come to us? No. We are not an immigration country. And I think it will change in the next years, but there is strong resistance, despite the fact that you see so many foreign-born people in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But many Germans cling to this idea. They're here for temporary, like guest workers. What a name.
I remember when I was in high school and stayed with that family, there were Turkish guest workers, and I think there might have been Italian and Spanish, too, in that little village.
Yeah. Yeah, but the assumption is that they will return home. Of course, if you have children and they go to school there and you have a retirement program,
yeah.
you want to go back? No. And look at me. I'm here for 30 years. Now I'm an American citizen.
What do you miss about Germany now?
That is interesting. That's one of the questions I'm asked the most. And it's very simple. My doctors. My medical doctors.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, I know. I think they are fantastic. And whenever I'm in Germany and need a doctor, it's an experience. And my partner, she went several times with me there, and we had to visit a doctor for an emergency. She was impressed.
Mm.
I think it's a, I don't know why, but the doctors are really good, and I'm in good hands. I mean, I could tell you a little anecdote about this, but I don't know, we're running out of time here.
Can you make it quick?
Yeah. I had a sinus problem. I just came back from China, and I went to a doctor, and he examined me, and he said, what medicine do you take? And I said, it's this, and it's a very common medicine. I don't want to say any names you can buy in Walgreens. Every American knows it makes you sleep. It's a syrup. And he looked at the chemical formula, and he said, you got a prescription for that, right? And he said, no, you can buy it over the counter in America. He said, you're kidding me. You know that's derived from opiates. And then he showed me the formula. And yeah. I said, I had no idea. Everybody takes it in America to fall asleep. It's totally normal.
Yeah.
He said, you're kidding me. And then he looked at the chemical formula, which was for me like hieroglyphs. And he said, oh, I understand what they did. They exchanged this molecule here. I mean, he is a normal practitioner doctor, and he could read these chemical formulas like I read a poem, and it was a piece of cake. I was impressed. And he gave me very good advice.
And when you go back to Germany, you still can visit your doctors.
If you
need to.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we are just about out of time, but Is there anything that you'd like to say to our listeners, any message or anything that you've noticed about America that maybe we didn't notice about ourselves? Anything, anything about your experience living here as an immigrant and now a citizen?
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes, especially right now, Americans think way too negative about their own country. Maybe in the past they thought too positive, but now they think everything is so bad, and especially the other side.
Yeah.
And I see actually between liberals and conservatives what they have in common.
Interesting.
And many Americans don't want to see that anymore.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah. Well, that's a hopeful note to end on. We'll leave it there. Dirk, thank you. Congratulations again for becoming a citizen.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your time. I wish we had more time to talk, but this has been really interesting. Vielen Dank.
Gern geschehen.
Okay. You've been listening to Stories of New Americans. This is News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1. Please join us next week.